Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report, our Farm Policy and Finance Special. Coming up in this half hour, we'll take a look at farm policy as we move forward through the 2017 season and what we can expect out of Washington, D.C. We'll also explore finance as it relates to the farm and what producers might expect from their banking system. That all comes up during this half hour right here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Our term of the day is liquidity. In business, economics, or investment, market liquidity is an asset's ability to be sold without causing a significant movement in the price and with minimum loss of value. Money or cash is the most liquid asset and can be used immediately to perform economic actions like buying, selling, or paying debt, meeting immediate wants and needs. However, currencies, even major currencies, can suffer loss of market liquidity in large liquidation events. A liquid asset has some or all of the following features. It can be sold rapidly, with minimal loss of value, any time within market hours. The essential characteristics of a liquid market is that there are always ready and willing buyers and sellers. Another elegant definition of liquidity is the probability that the next trade is executed at a price equal to the last one. A market may be considered deeply liquid if there are ready and willing buyers and sellers in large quantities. This is related to market depth that can be measured as the units that can be sold or bought for a given price impact. The opposite is that of market breadth, measured as the price impact per unit of liquidity. An illiquid asset is an asset which is not readily saleable due to uncertainty about its value or the lack of a market in which it is regularly traded. The liquidity of a product can be measured as how often it is bought and sold. This is known as volume. Often investments in liquid markets, such as the stock markets or futures markets, are considered to be more liquid than investments such as real estate, based on their ability to be converted quickly. And that's a definition of liquidity.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Let me take a moment now to thank you for listening to our ag programming. Thank you. I mean it. Really. Thank you for listening to the programming. And just as a reminder, here's what you hear each and every business day. We start at 8:55 a.m. with the opening market report, including Aaron Curtis, Pete Manhart, Bill Gentry, Ellen Dearden, and Bill Mayer. And then an update at 10:58 a.m. with five other voices, Joe Vaklevic, Greg Ginder, Merrill Crowley, Chip Nellinger, and Steve Georgie, followed up at 12:58 each and every business day with Sue Martin, and then, of course, the closing market report, including our analysts Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Jackie Vakes, Dan Zwicker, and Mike Zuzalem. And we wrap up each week by recording Commodity Week on Thursday evening. You can hear it at willag.org that night or on Friday afternoon at 2:36. Oh, and don't forget that we also have a whole series of regularly scheduled analysts during the closing market report for weather. Those include meteorologist on Monday, Mark Russo, Tuesday, Don Day, Wednesday, Drew Lerner, Thursday, Mike Tenora, and on Friday afternoon, both Jim Angel and Eric Snodgrass. WillAg.org. We think it's one of the most comprehensive places that you can find information about markets and weather and agricultural news. Oh, and thank you. Thank you so much for listening.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is our Farm Finance and Policy Special. Please do visit our website, willag.org, willag.org. There you can find all of our agricultural programming from the Closing Market Report to the Commodity Week program and everything in between. Thanks so much for listening. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about farm finance with the folks from CAECO ISEM. And then we'll catch up with Gary Schnitke and discuss what happened in the 2016 growing season as it relates to on-farm gross income. It was better than 2015, but not great. It should be a great half hour. Stay with us right here on Illinois Public Media. It's kind of that time of the year when you're thinking about taxes. Maybe when you're doing those, you're considering really what that implication would be long-term. Maybe some other things for your farm as well. CAECO ISEM is a national and international consulting firm on farm finances and other things. They're here with us today to talk a little bit about some of those items. Let's start with the incoming president of the United States, Donald Trump, and just exactly what it is that might mean to taxes and tax planning and the estate tax. And Jim Ryan of CAECO ISEM is with us. He's from Loveland, Colorado, so we have a new president that will come in on the 20th day of January. You've been thinking a little bit about what that means potentially for taxes and the estate taxes that farmers have to deal with. What's your assumptions now?
I think what we'll see, Todd, is a very quick, historically quick, take on tax reform in the first 100 days of the presidency. Now that we have a Republican unified Congress and a Republican president, I think we'll see tax legislation on the president's desk relatively quickly. What's unknown is the impact as it relates to producers. We would anticipate we'll see lower income tax brackets for these producers. What's really unknown is on the estate tax side is if they'll be able to either repeal estate tax or at least reduce the impact that estate tax has on producers today. There's quite a laundry list of items that the president wants to achieve, and I think he and Congress will quickly have to come to an agreement as to what the priority of those items are. But I think income tax reform will be towards the top of that list.
And you believe this will happen in the first 100 days? I would think that might be a pretty big chunk to bite off in that period.
It really is. But I think it's very clear that Congress is really wanting to move quickly. I think President-elect Trump will also want to move quickly. And when I think of the first 100 days, that legislation may not be perfect. It may not be ready for signature. But I think we will see something drafted and shared with all of us in terms of what that proposal will look like on the income tax side. Again, they'll have to understand the priority. We've heard the Affordable Care Act is something that they want to repeal and replace. We heard that infrastructure is something that's very popular in terms of this president's wish list, and also repatriating income that is overseas that has not yet been taxed in the United States. So there's an awful lot to sort through, but I think that's going to be the priority to get something accomplished, again, in a fairly short amount of time.
How much of an impediment will the United States Senate be, recalling that even if there is a majority on the Republican side, it does take 60 votes, and that's not the number of Republicans in the Senate for anything to be passed out of that body?
I think what we'll see, Todd, is they'll go through, instead of going through direct Senate approval where you're right, where they do need 60 votes, they'll go through a budget reconciliation process to avoid that necessity. But nevertheless, there's a need for a number of senators to be on board with what the president has proposed. And I think you'll see a lot of that during the next 60 days in terms of that transition period and a lot of those bridges hopefully being built. I think that's what we'll be seeing.
We're talking with the folks from CAECO Isom. They're a financial consulting group nationally and internationally. They do operate in Illinois and Indiana and the rest of the Midwest. Kevin Mills is with us as well from that organization. And he's been considering for a very long time, I suspect, succession planning or how to pass farms along. It sounds from the discussion we just had with Jim that this is going to get a lot easier in the future, potentially. Does it make a difference in how producers, landowners might want to consider passing along or putting together a succession plan?
Well, we know what the rules are today, and they're very advantageous for high net worth ag producers. And the thing about high net worth ag producers is to be relevant in agriculture, they have to be of a pretty decent size and a pretty decent net worth. All of our clients are asset rich and cash poor, and we know what the rules are today, so it's not just about avoiding estate taxes, it's about taking it on to the next generation in the right form, in the right manner. So it's protected from divorce. If one of their kids gets divorced long term, what does that do if somebody has to buy somebody out? So what I'd encourage people to do is, we know what the rules are today. You know, we've seen what's happened with President Obama, and then with a new administration can undo things really fast. It just takes four more years, and we don't know whether Mr. Trump is going to get reelected or not, and maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. We know what the rules are. There are things to put in place now that even if he doesn't and somebody goes back on and raises estate taxes and lowers the exemption, we can lock things in so they're protected for the long term to accomplish a client's goals. So I would encourage people, just because they're not as worried about estate taxes right now under Mr. Trump, that we know what the rules are, let's lock them in so that they can't change them on us.
And this is a two-tier function at the federal and the state level. You work across many states. Which is the most restrictive state, and which is the least restrictive states that you work in as it relates to estate taxes?
Well, a lot of states have repealed estate tax altogether. A lot of them are going there. Do some work in Michigan, and Michigan has been a little bit tough on, and let's see, Minnesota is also tough. If you look at the property taxes Minnesota ag producers are paying, it is hampering them significantly. So right now is a really tough time in food and agriculture, whether that's production agriculture or cattle feeding. People have been bleeding money this last year or two. So from Mr. Trump's perspective on agriculture, I think a couple of things that are critical is that ag producers have the ability to stay on the cash basis of accounting. That's probably the single most important tax item for ag producers. That lets people take the volatility out of the business. Cattle feeders this last year, like I said, have been bleeding money, and some of them are having a really hard time getting lines renewed, and some of them won't be able to feed cattle in the future. And that's bad when we have people that have been in the business for years and years and have a really bad year. The ability to defer their tax so that when they do have a bad year, they can dip into that with pre-tax dollars is huge. So the ability to be on cash basis, I think, is the single most important thing that ag producers keep. Right now, the estate laws are so advantageous, and I don't think that we'll ever have a time where there's no estate taxes. We've had it twice in our lives, and they've always came back the next year. So even if they were to repeal estate taxes, I fear they will come back. I think they're here to stay long term. So it doesn't matter what happened. I mean, if you wanted to not pay estate taxes and you had a high net worth, you should have died in 2010. So, but I'm also not very political.
So the point probably being on both taxes and estate taxes that you need to check consistently that what your plan is up to speed with what the government has in place today.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of our clients kind of tell us where they want to be at. They have a tax plan, a tax strategy. And in good years and in bad years, a lot of times they pay the same amount of tax, they take advantage of low rates, and they defer so that when they do have a really bad year, they have the wherewithal to withstand it. If they paid high taxes every year, they had a good year, and then couldn't get that money back, they wouldn't be in business.
Kevin Mills is with Kayco and Isom, and he handles estates and taxes. But also with Isom is one other person today, Emily Johannes. She takes a look at some different things, sustainability on the farm. Tell me what that means in terms of financial consulting group. It seems an oddity.
It does seem an oddity, and I like to make the joke that, you know, you wouldn't think of sustainability, you know, in an accounting and financial consulting firm, but it actually makes a lot of sense because we really work on what we call the triple bottom line. You know, are you managing all those aspects of your business that lend to making it profitable and sustaining it for generations to come? So it very much is about managing the business and the opportunities you have in that to sustain it in the long term.
And those are what?
Well, it can be everything from inputs and soil. If you're growing crops in the Midwest, it can be on, you know, cattle buying if you're raising cattle and how you're doing on your genetics. It can range to employees and how your, you know, employees are doing. So things like employee engagement, for example, can really prove to be an important thing to look at in a farm business because it lends to better productivity, less worker accidents, less issues with animal handling and animal care if you're raising livestock. So all these issues are intertwined, and that's really what we help producers understand is how to balance all those across the business and really to plan for them in the future.
Why does Kayco Isom have somebody like you or more than one person like you in the business? Because it doesn't seem like you quite fit, so there must be a really good bottom line dollar reason that you're there.
Absolutely, there really is. And first and foremost, there is return on investment in you know, sustainability. And so there's things like cost savings, of course, but also what we work on are the market and value opportunities that can come from sustainability. So greater profitability can occur and is occurring under sustainability because we have the pull from the consumers ultimately that want to know more what's happening on the farm. And so we're ensuring that farm businesses are going to thrive under that and be able to connect into that in ways they haven't before.
How do you do that?
Well, it's all about partnering across a pretty complex value chain. But that's ultimately where this sustainability work is heading, is to share information and data across from the farm all the way to the consumer. And so what's emerging in this space is that consumers, because they desire to know more about the farm, are pushing that desire through the entire value chain. And it's hitting the farm business directly. And so we want our farm businesses to be prepared for that as well as glean as much value from it as they can. And that may be new opportunities. It might be being part of a marketing campaign for a particular product. It might be a direct supply relationship that hasn't occurred before. We're seeing that a lot in the dairy industry, for example. And so there's a lot of examples to point to where farm businesses are, you know, prominently displayed to the consumer, and that has value.
I understand the value of what you do to Kayco Isom in terms of it makes my client endeared to me. It ensures that they're really capable of coming and getting loans or whatever that case might be, that I can really work with them. However, the whole ability, and I talk about that in terms of sustainability of the farm,
sure,
keeping the farm running.
Yep.
But the idea of taking the sustainability to the consumer, kind of a different sort of sustainability, is a little foreign for a company, I think, like Kayco. And I still don't quite make the connection of why that's important and valuable to the financial consulting firm.
Well, it's just all about being prepared. And so we looked across the landscape of what those forces are going to be that are affecting food and ag, and the issue of consumer trust in the food and agriculture system and their disconnection from the farm, we felt was really going to impact farm businesses. And so if we look ahead to that and try to prepare clients for that, we feel that that will get them best prepared to, you know, to be able to meet those needs as well as maybe even exceed them and be well positioned in the future.
Emily, thank you.
Thank you.
Emily Johannes is with CAECO ISIN.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You know, it looks like this year is going to be better than last year for farmers in central Illinois. The gross revenue for corn is $292 an acre. That's tallied from three income sources. The crop is worth $262. There was a $20 farm safety net payment from the Arc County program and a $10 crop insurance indemnity. The total, again, $292, is lower than last year, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnittke.
Even though we're putting in a very high yield, we're using 231 bushels for corn average yield, which is the same as in 2014. But prices have come down, so revenues look like they will be down for corn in 2016 as compared to 2015.
Schnittke calculated the gross revenue figures for the FarmDoc Daily website. The soybean figures add up in a similar fashion. The gross revenue is estimated to total $718 an acre. It's a figure much higher than the 2015 gross.
We're putting in, again, very high yields for 2016. Record-breaking yields, in fact, of 73 bushels per acre and a price of $9.50, which is above last year and may actually turn out to be low as we continue to look at prices this year. But overall, revenue on corn or soybeans will be up from last year and will be much higher than total costs. So our bright spot for the 2016 year will be revenue and incomes from soybeans.
All in all, on the highly productive soils of central Illinois, 2016 will go down as a high-yield, low-income year. Another year in which farmers just get by, says Gary Schnittke.
Get by year, but better than could have been without those yields. Most farmers will probably stay about the same equity-wise, may still continue to see some working capital declines. Those working capital declines will be more pronounced for farms with more cash rent and higher cash rent levels, something we've been saying for the last several years. But in any case, better than 2015, but still not up to levels where we can say we're sustainable in the long run. We need to see some higher returns, particularly corn prices in the future.
There are a series of graphics detailing 2016 Central Illinois row crop farm gross income on the FarmDoc Daily website. You may look it up at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You know it's the winter meeting season, and I'll be on the road a lot. If you'd like to see where, you can find that online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Just look for the calendar link, and you can see where we'll be during this winter meeting season. By the way, if you'd like to schedule a Will Ag Outlook panel, please do give me a call at 217-333-9697 or at tgleason@illinois.edu. Back in just a couple of minutes.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For 100 years, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
It's National Date Nut Bread Day. It's also the winter solstice, shortest day of the year. On this day in agricultural history in 1882, Edward Johnson, an associate of Thomas Edison, strung his Christmas tree with electric lights, the first time that's happened in history. Christmas tree lights quickly became all the rage among wealthy Americans, and they flocked to snap up those made by the Edison General Electric Company. Those early lights came in strings of 9 sockets, each with a miniature 2-candle-power 32-volt carbon filament lamp. In 1884, John Simpson Chisholm died, an American cattle rancher. In 1867, he blazed the Chisholm Trail from San Antonio, Texas to Abilene, Kansas. Cattle drives up the trail often took up to 2 months, and there were risks from rustlers, conflicts with Native Americans, to the difficulties in crossing the Arkansas and Red Rivers. Chisholm developed the largest cattle herd in the United States. And in 1943, Beatrix Potter died, an English author of children's books. Her first was the most famous, perhaps, The Tale of Peter Rabbit, originally written as an illustrated letter to a sick child. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
If you think about it, says Forrest Troyer, the corn plant has been moved northward more than half a continent. The genetic pool from which it evolved has been sliced and diced by farmers and breeders in North America for about 3,000 years. Most of the selection pressure has come in the last 200 years when the gene pool was divided 1,000 ways, and then more than 99% of those crosses were eliminated. That leaves a very small domesticated gene pool from which corn breeders can draw to improve the crop. Troyer says it is vital, then, that the geneticists and corn breeders understand how that pool was narrowed. He suggests they start by reading the works of Charles Darwin.
Darwin's advice was to study the plant, to look at it sharply, to relate what you're seeing to the information that you've learned about botany, about how a plant works, and then through that, decide what it needs to do better. Adaptation is the critical thing. Adaptation is the sole driving force as far as biological evolution is concerned. It's what makes everything happen. And so it makes all the sense in the world to think in terms of how can I make this plant better adapted to get higher yielding, more reliable corns.
The second notion Troyer says corn breeders should think about is the importance of wide adaptation. He says weather is the reason hybrid corn breeders narrowed the gene pool early in the 20th century. It was easier to market and grow a corn which could adapt to widely variable weather conditions.
I think most farmers understand that maybe better than most plant breeders. And so wide adaptation is a very important trait. We can select for this by having more test locations, by looking the things that don't jump around so much at different locations and different seasons, you know, very high yielding here, very low yielding over here, and so forth. We want those ones that can take the give and take that the environment puts out.
After understanding the relationship of weather to the crop and how it was used to widely adapt the corn plant across the U.S., Troyer believes today's and tomorrow's corn plant breeders will be better able to pinpoint the genetic differences, which could result in an improvement. He also says the gene pool could be expanded by looking into the old crosses and the wild relatives of the corn plant, or by altering it with genes from another organism. To him, the science remains only the science if it is addressed cautiously. In that caution, the world could find another green revolution. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.